together. I'm a good cook. You like your feet? I'll rub them. I have dream journals about you filled pages. I know you can hear me.
We love you more than you'll ever want to know. WMFO Medford.
I want to kiss you on the mouth.
WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there's no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. My name is Arthur. It's the 27th of September, 2023. I'm going to be training Rick this morning, so I'm going to go ahead and play a show that I played previously. It's one of my favorites. It's one of Jack Webb's summer programs called Pete Kelly's Blues. It has an original air date of the 25th of July, 1951. Thanks.
This one's about Pete Kelly. It's about the world he goes around in. It's about the big music and the big trouble and the big 20s. So when they ask you, tell them this one's about the blues. Pete Kelly's Blues.
Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Jim Moser and music by Dick Cathcart.
My name's Pete Kelly. I play cornet. You'll find us at 417 Cherry Street, Kansas City. It's a standard speakeasy. We got 35 cases of cut whiskey and a 7-piece band. We start every night at 10 and we play till 6 in the morning. It's not much, but the contract runs out in June 1924. After that, there's a place in South Chicago that may take us. In the meantime, we're working here on Cherry Street. The lease is made out to George Lupo. His brother gave it to him after the funeral. The kind of music we play started out as a backroom exercise in a little swamp stop called Myrtle Grove. La Rocca took his Dixieland band to Reisenweber's in New York. We got as far as Kansas City. It's no place to get off a train unless you're a sack of mail. Because around here, everybody works at the same job, staying alive. Half a buck buys a pair of socks, a spaghetti dinner, or a down payment on murder. Well, last night, everything turned sour about midnight. The town was down on its hands and knees trying to crawl through one of those Kansas City hot spells that blast by every third day. It was heat and headaches all the way. Our drummer Nick was dragging the beat, and I went bad 12 bars in on the Memphis Blues. Well, I figured we better cut the set short, so we started to fight our way through one chorus of Roses of Picardy. That's when the kid came in and stood by the bandstand. He was tall enough to see over a quart of milk, with a face the size of a minute and just about as young.
All right, let's get off for a while.
Who's your friend, Pete?
I don't know, but he must be tone deaf.
Hey, Mr. Kelly!
Yeah, son?
I heard you play. You sound good.
We've been better. What's on your mind?
Father Cronin sent me to see you.
Are you doing a little missionary work?
Oh, no, sir, nothing like that. I'm an altar boy over there. Father calls me Little Jake.
I sure got you working the late shift.
I've been trying to get a hold of you all day. Father wants a favor.
I'll make it a small one. I'm all out of the big ones.
He just wanted to know if you could come by St. Timothy's and see him. He said tomorrow morning, right after the 9 o'clock.
Okay. Tell him he keeps terrible hours. I'll be there.
Thanks, Mr. Kelly.
Hey, Kelly.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell the kid goodbye.
He knows his way out.
Should I go, Mr. Kelly?
Beat it, kid.
Yes, sir. Goodbye, Mr. Kelly.
Yeah, goodbye, Jake.
You got someplace private we'd like to talk?
This is my office.
Now listen hard, Bright Eyes. There's enough gun in this coat to blow you right through the wall.
I'll take your word for it.
We come in here nice and you get funny mouth.
Now you got someplace we can talk.
I can't leave. I gotta do a number.
Do it.
We'll be right here about 10 feet from your stomach.
Yeah. All right. Let's go.
You look sick, Pete. What's the matter?
I feel fine. Who's sorry now? Everybody ready? Let's go.
You proved it. Now let's go.
Yeah. Keep them going, Red.
How many shall we do, Pete?
If this works out, about 10 minutes worth. Let's go.
Hey, Ollie will do. We need a favor, Kelly.
Yeah, there's a run on them tonight.
Give me the envelope, Dix.
Yeah.
You got an inside coat pocket, Kelly?
Come on. Either throw or pass the dice.
Hold him, Dix. Pull him up, Dix.
Come on. Up.
Yeah.
Now, this is how. Here's an envelope. It goes in your inside coat pocket, and it stays there until 6 o'clock tomorrow night. You don't open it. You don't mess with it.
What happens at 6 o'clock?
You'll be the first to know.
Well, I stood there in the alley and watched him walk away. Inside, Lupo was blowing up a storm. Something about paying for a 7-piece band and only having 6. Well, it wasn't worth trying to get back on the stand. I got a cab and went up to my room. I tried to get to sleep. It was no good. I got up. I was sick to my stomach. After that, I went to sleep. The next morning, I made a pass at some breakfast and tried to look through the sports page. Harry Heilman got 4 for 5 against the Red Sox, but that's all I read. That envelope had me. People have been taken out in alleys before, and they've been worked over, usually to get something away from them, not to give it to them. No matter how I tried to put it together, it wouldn't come out. Thin or fat, it wouldn't slice. I had the envelope, and I had to wait till 6 o'clock. Well, I gave up on the coffee, and I started over to see Father Cronin. It was a little after 9:30 when I started up the steps of St. Timothy's. I figured Mass was almost over, so I hung around in the vestibule for a couple of minutes, trying to look like a part-time bell ringer.
Hi, Mr. Kelly.
Hello, Jake.
Father's back in the sacristy, Mr. Kelly. He said for me to show you the way.
They move it?
No, sir.
All right, Jake, show me the way.
This way, Mr. Kelly. Down this aisle.
Well, I guess I was too busy trying to act like I knew my way around to pay much attention to a fat, chunky little guy wearing a brown Borsellino hat. He stood up in a back pew a couple of aisles over. The church was empty except for the three of us.
Little Jake found out about it just before I did.
Mr. Kelly, that man back there.
All right, mister. I'll take that envelope.
Jake, get down.
Mr. Kelly, look out! Look out!
Well, in Kansas City, you learn early to look for trouble. Any place, any time. But this is the first time it caught up with me in the middle of a church. The last three shots were a waste of money. Jake went down like young wheat in a hailstorm. When I grabbed for him, I hit my head on the base of a marble pillar. I lost the edge right there. By the time I hit the street, he was gone. I guess I covered every alley and street in the neighborhood, but it was like trying to wash a pail of dirty water. I don't know how much later it was when I stopped for a minute in an empty doorway and tried to remember what I was chasing. Well, a siren was crying off somewhere in the distance, and I started back for the church. The coroner's wagon was just pulling away as I got there. I didn't see Father Cronin around, so I went back to the rectory and rang the bell. He came to the door in his shirt sleeves. He stood there for a minute just looking at me. Then he motioned me inside.
In here. Sit down.
The kid, Father? Little Jake?
He's dead. You want a blow by blow?
Yeah, I know, Father. I was there.
Sure you were there. You're always there. I should have known better than to call you. I should have known it meant trouble.
Oh, wait a minute, Father. This wasn't my party.
I called you here today to ask you a favor, Pete.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know. It's too late now. We were going to have an altar boys picnic tomorrow at Washington Park. I wanted you to play a little music for us. We won't be going now, Pete. We got a funeral instead.
Yeah. What do you want me to say?
Don't say anything, Pete. If you've got any private fights, that's your business. But don't bring your beefs into the church.
I never saw the guy before, Father.
Don't kid me. He didn't come in here to shoot little Jake.
Now, look, I know this is hard to understand.
You bet it's hard to understand. We've been over it before, but you ran with the same pack. You hung on to the same friends. You had it all figured out. Well, you figured this one, Pete. There's a 9-year-old boy on his way to the morgue. He took a gangster's bullet that you earned. Now you go ahead. Figure it.
I got this envelope.
I don't want an explanation. Take your excuses and peddle them where you need them. To the bootleggers and the gunmen. Take them to your crowd.
This envelope, Father. They shoved it in my pocket. I was out in the alley behind the club. Two guys. They worked me over. I didn't think they'd try anything like this.
Neither did little Jake.
All right, Father. I told you I was sorry.
Go on home.
Why don't you stop cutting at me and say a prayer for that kid?
I would, but I'm too busy praying for people like you.
Couldn't blame him. How do you explain away a dead kid lying in front of an altar rail? All I could offer was a 2-cent envelope in my coat pocket and a wild night in an alley. I started to walk back to my room. I tried to paste up some kind of an answer, but I got nothing. I was halfway home when the last breeze left town and went someplace to cool off. My clothes were soaking wet, and I decided to take a cab the rest of the way. I reached in my pocket and all I had was 23 cents, so I kept walking. Sunday morning's the same in any town. Empty streets and everybody home trading the comic section and living off a Saturday night. You could live here all your life, and on Sunday morning you just got in town. It was about noon when I got to my hotel. I went up to the second floor and unlocked my door. They were sitting on the bed. Their coats were off and they'd hung them on the back of a chair. The same two boys who'd given me the envelope last night.
Got a real hot room here, Kelly. You ought to move off this cord.
Yeah, next time I'll get twin beds.
Is everything all right with that envelope?
It made a murder, mister. You take it.
Put it back in your pocket.
Now get this, both of you. There's a lot of something wrong here. I've had my turn. You find yourself another fall guy. There's a lot of inside coat pockets in this town. Look for a new one.
We like yours, and that's where it's going to stay. Now, you don't listen good. Me and Dex put it out last night, and you didn't pick up on it. We got you on board, and we'll tell you when to get off.
6 o'clock, boy.
How long do you think this jag will last? Look, I'm cashing in. I've had enough.
What were you doing this morning, trying to pray your way out?
A priest wanted a favor.
I got it, Lon.
Yeah. Yeah, he's here. No, he's busy. Room 205. Sure, come on up. Benny.
He went for it, huh?
On his way up. We're going to stay a while, Kelly.
Well, there's only 3 chairs. I'll make it easy for you.
Stay put, mister.
No, he's your friend. I'm checking out.
It's the first time you've been right.
Well, it happened so fast, I didn't even see his arm move. My knees buckled and I pitched forward. I don't know how long I laid there, but when I opened my eyes, the afternoon sun was almost gone. What was left of it was bleeding through a rip in the blind. Well, I could hear somebody breathing hard like a fat man on a hot day, and when I rolled over, I saw him. A tough prohibition agent by the name of Cage. The weather didn't make any difference to Cage. He always looked that way. His collar was wilted, and it looked like Arrow's first try. His necktie was pulled down, and the knot was twisted. The heat had worked him over so that the front of his shirt was splotchy and damp. reminded you of a first grader's map of the world. He was sitting in a chair with his arms draped over the back and his head resting on his hands. He was smoking a Milo Violet, but it didn't help that much. His mouth was wound around a toothy grin, and he looked like a mountain lion who'd just eaten her young.
You can get up now, Keller. You made your point.
Yeah, sure. How long you been here?
Long enough to fill out your book and slip. You're going to jail, mister.
What for? Sleeping on the floor?
For the dead guy on the bed. Who is he?
I don't know. How'd he get there?
You put him there after you shot him. Now get your hat.
Look, Prohibition's your racket. Dead bodies are out of your line.
Not when I find him in your room. Now let's go downtown. We'll both tell homicide. We'll find the details later.
Gage, you couldn't find yourself in a mirror. I didn't have anything to do with this, and you know it. I've been out for the last 3 hours. This happened after they slugged
me. Save it for the jury. All I know is I got a phone tip to check room 205. I come up here and I find you and a dead guy. That's all I need. You can dress it up fancy and make it look cute, but it's still comes out murder.
There's enough liquor in this town to float it away, and you're wasting your time with a killing that's none of your business.
You're my business, big shot. Somebody put 2 pounds of lead in Benny's chest, and you're my pick.
Benny who?
Benny Davis. He worked for Mike Quinlan. You look pale.
Yeah, I'm just beginning to feel the squeeze. Mike Quinlan on one side and those two trigger men that you let walk out of here on the other.
You got it, and I'll be turning the handle.
Now, before you start worrying about your picture in the paper, you better turn up the two guys that were here with me.
That part of the same dream?
They gave me an envelope to hold for him. The price on it's going up with a minute. A 9-year-old kid died for it, and this guy here on the bed.
That's a good story. Do you write him down or just make him up?
Look, you got nothing on me, and I haven't got much time. I'm leaving you.
That's all right. I call downtown. The minute you hit the street, they'll pick you up.
In the meantime, you better come up with more than you got. They don't hang you in this state on a hunch.
I'm gonna check this room over. I'll find all we need.
You couldn't find your head with both hands. Goodbye, Cage.
All right, you got till midnight, big shot, and then I'll be around.
Yeah.
I'll have it all set up. All we'll need is time to run the extra.
Well, I could have used a cold shower, but with Cage there, I didn't have the room to dry off. I went down the hall and headed down the back stairs. I figured even if Cage was right about calling downtown, I might have an edge if I moved fast enough. The sun was on the downgrade, but it didn't make any difference. It'd done a good job all day, and the heat was boiling up out of the ground. But if I was going to come out at all, I had to have some help. So I started to look for the only honest guy I know, an ex-bootlegger by the name of Barney Ricketts, the only bootlegger in the country that went broke in 1922. He drank himself out of business. I phoned 8 different places and tried 4. Nobody'd seen him. I was about ready to give up when I finally found him sitting in the middle of a bourbon fog in a little Spanish joint somewhere on the edge of the East Bottoms. He was sitting at a back table trying his best to make time with a plaster bust of Queen Isabella.
Ah, Peachy, my boy, you're just in time. I'm not quite certain, but I think the young lady here has a friend.
I gotta talk to you, Barney.
If you're any good at all with Spanish, now is the time. I was positive she'd loosen up on the second bottle of wine, but no, she's utterly uncharitable, and I think she's a picture of a perfect boy.
Yeah, all right, Barney.
Peachy, to a member of the old Castilian school, there can be no excuse for the conduct she's exhibiting.
Yeah.
Why, do you know I was even good enough to buy her 3 rounds of Portuguese brandy? Imported, mind you. But what do I get for my pains? Not even a civil thank you.
All right, listen to me, will you, Barney?
I've been sitting here in the most gentlemanly fashion, sipping this delicate nectar and trying vainly to keep the party going. But does she help? No! I've talked to her about politics, medicine, literature, Keats, Byron, Shelley, Faith, Baldwin. I've even talked about the weather.
Barney, she's a statue.
Oh, a simple oversight, Petey. It could happen to anyone.
Now, look, I'm in trouble.
Of course you're in trouble. You'll always be in trouble because you're a child of adversity, a son of scorn. The fates spit in your eye and you try to retaliate, but the wind's always blowing in the wrong direction. You're a lost leaf in the mortal storm, Petey. You're a pebble shaking a tiny fist at the mountain. You'd like to fight for some strange, fantastic cause, wouldn't you? But you can't find anybody your size. Men are too small and the gods are too big. Petey, you're lost.
You all through now?
Yes, what kind of trouble?
A pair of bum murder raps. Somebody slugged me in my room and I woke up with a dead guy.
Dubious honor. You mentioned 2 murders.
One of them was an altar boy over at St. Timothy's. The other guy worked for Mike Quinlan.
The same Quinlan that controls most of the Canadian import here in town?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh, time's short. Let's finish the brandy.
2 guys started all this at the club last night. Names are Ludd and Dex. Mean anything to you?
This'll all sound better with more brandy. You picked 2 of Quinlan's first string. Ludd Sandell and Dex Porter, both killers.
Look, they gave me an envelope to hang on to. Now nose around. See if you can find out what it all means. The dead guy up in my room, his name's Benny Davis. See if you can find out where he fits in, will you?
It'd be a lot simpler if you just joined Quinlan's gang. Benny Davis holds a card in the same organization.
Well, how about Ludd and Dex? Any bad blood between them and
Davis? If there is, it doesn't show. They're closer than unborn peas.
You sure about that, Barney?
Police blotter can't be that wrong. Benny's sister will tell you the same thing.
Well, where do I find her?
Chelsea Apartments. Beautiful girl, Petey. When you're my age, she'll disturb your memories.
All right, now get going, will you? See how close you can get to Quinlan's headquarters. Find out what you can about Ludd and Dex and Benny Davis. Maybe Quinlan's got him on a special job or something. Find out what it is, will you?
You find me in a temporary economic slump, Petey. I'll need carfare.
Yeah, well, that makes two of us. I'm broke. You'll have to do it on foot.
Oh, well, I have friends here, and my credit's unlimited.
Well, hurry up, will you, Barney?
One moment. Alfonso, would you loan me a dollar and a half?
Come on, let's go.
He's only bluffing. He won't shoot.
Well, Barney headed down toward Bale Street for Mike Quinlan's place, and I started cross town for the North End and the Chelsea Apartments. I couldn't begin to work it out. If Dex and Ludd were such good friends with Benny Davis, why did they kill him? And if they didn't do it, who planted his body in my room and why? Well, I was running way late and there wasn't much time to catch up. I finally found the Chelsea Apartments on the corner of Stocker and Bales. It was an old three-story wooden frame. I checked the mailbox and Louise Davis was down for apartment 17. Well, inside, the hallway was dark and a couple of gas jets were smoking up the ceiling. There was a potted palm by the foot of the stairs, and it looked like it was growing out of old gum wrappers and cigar butts. Apartment 17 was at the rear of the first floor. She answered the door, and you could tell right away Barney was right. She was pretty, and she had enough smile to last you for years.
Yes?
You Louise Davis?
That's right. I can do better for you. You're Pete Kelly. I've heard you play.
Yeah, well, so far you're batting 1,000. Can I come in?
Yeah, sure. You didn't bring your band, so it must be a social call.
I'll make this short. It's about Benny.
What about him?
That's what I want to know. He's got a couple of friends. I got to know about him.
Then he isn't that popular. You mean Ludd and Dex?
They'll do. They got trouble and they're cutting me in.
What kind of trouble?
Well, I'm not sure. That's why I came to you.
I can't help you. They never tell me what they're doing.
Well, they gave me an envelope. They told me to hold it till 6 o'clock tonight.
You haven't got any problem. You'll know in an hour.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm tired. I want to know now. I'll take any leads you got.
They found out I told you this. They might not like it. They got some kind of a beef with Quinlan.
Does Mike know about it?
I wouldn't know. I just heard him talking one night. They're not happy with the money Quinlan gives them.
They got any plans?
I don't think we better talk about this. Let me get you a drink, huh?
Now, look, this is the last trip around for me, lady. I gotta have everything you know.
You said something about an envelope, didn't you?
That's right.
You got it?
Right here.
If you open it, you'll understand everything.
Well, they gave it to me sealed. They want it back the same way.
If you want to be around to give it back, you'd better open it.
You got a guarantee handy?
All I know is the three of them are working on something big. I don't know what it is, but I heard some talk about an envelope. It's your choice. You ask for a lead and you got it.
Yeah, we'll hold hands when they cut me down. You got a letter opener?
Pete, look out!
Well, it all happened faster than a Mexican divorce. Louise Davis was dead before the echo left the room. Well, I got to the window, but whoever did the shooting was gone. I grabbed the envelope and on my way out, I took another look at her. There wasn't anything left but the smile. I cut through a couple of back lots and down an alley. I stopped in a doorway and opened the envelope. Inside was a handful of typewritten sheets. Looked like a lot of headache for five pieces of paper. And then the bell rang. Two of them were consignment slips for 8,000 gallons of high-grade Canadian whiskey. The other three slips were detailed breakdowns for a convoy of trucks. They showed special truck routes over the Canadian border into the States to miss the hijackers and the prohibition agents. They showed a day-by-day schedule for each truck on its trip down from the border. Well, it's not too tough to hijack a load of booze, but when you got it laid out right down to the time, the place, and how many bottles, it's like money in the bank. Well, I knew right then why the envelope meant so much to Ludd and Dex. What I couldn't understand was where they got it. Why they gave it to me to hang on to. Well, maybe they were working for Quinlan, but why didn't he have the papers, and why weren't they in his safe? Mike had a big one. Well, the questions were still piling up. It was an outside chance, but I couldn't stand still, so I crossed over to the Kansas side and headed down Boulder Road to Fat Annie's place. Maggie Jackson did two things good. She sang the blues better than the guy who wrote them, and she could pick up an idle rumor at 3 miles.
Hi, Pete.
Maggie, what do you know?
I knew you'd be here tonight. You always come in together. Trouble and Pete Kelly.
Yeah, I know. I never come around except when I need something.
As long as I have it to give, you got it. It's Mike Quinlan this time, ain't it?
Well, that's part of it. I'm in it up to my ears.
You got an envelope, I heard.
Yeah.
Mike Quinlan and some of his boys have been here about an hour ago. They tore the paper off the walls looking for you and Dex and Ludd.
Dex and Ludd?
Mike wants all three of you.
Yeah, anything else?
No. Barney Ricketts called for you.
Did he leave a number?
He's still waiting on the phone. I took the call. He said you'd end up here, so he just hung on.
Well, I'll get it right now.
Yeah, the boss is kind of mad. The phone's been tied up for 2 hours.
All right, thanks, Maggie.
Sure, and good luck, Pete.
Hello, Barney.
There you are, Petey.
That'll be $1.25 for another 3 minutes.
Yes, all right, operator. Alfonso, 5 more quarters, please. No, no, the quarters. Just a minute, Petey. Alfonso doesn't know the quarters from the house.
Yeah, well, hurry up.
That's right.
Thank you.
Now then, Pete. No, no, Alfonso. No more money for the moment.
What's going on, Barney? Where are you?
Fort Madison, Iowa. I'm troubleshooting for you, Pete.
What'd you find out?
It's a double cross. Mike Quinlan's involved in one of the biggest deals of his career, and Benny Davis, along with Dex and Ludd, stole the consignment papers.
Yeah, I know. That's what's in the envelope.
You better get them back to Quinlan. I understand he's been tearing up the town for them.
Well, what do I do about Dex and Ludd?
She might easily end up like Benny Davis. Seems Ludd and Dex didn't want to split it three ways, so they killed him.
You sure about all this?
That's why I'm up here in Iowa. I suggest that you join us.
No, I'll see you when you get back.
It's been a gay, mad world, Petey. We drove 60 miles an hour all the way up here.
Yeah?
Alfonso's drunk. He thinks the phone's a slot machine. He's waiting for the payoff.
Well, as soon as I hung up the phone, everything fell into place. I had one big worry, to get back to the club and unload those papers before Quinlan caught up with me. Well, almost everything made sense now, except the killing of Louise Davis, Benny's sister. It was easy to see why they dropped Benny along the way, but why his sister? How did she tie in? Well, on the way back to town, I mulled over a couple of possibilities, and I figured maybe I came up with the answer. I started back for town, and it was rough all the way. I kept thinking any minute I'd bump into Mike Quinlan, and I couldn't be sure that I'd lost Dex and Ludd. It was almost dark by the time I got back to the club. The band was waiting around for the Sunday rehearsal. We ran through one number, and then things got cloudy.
Now, Kelly.
You're early, Dex.
Close enough.
No, not for me. You said 6 o'clock.
Your horn's no match for this gun. Give me the envelope.
6 o'clock, Dex. All right. Let's try someday, sweetheart. Hand me that plunger, will you, Red? I'll give you the pickup. I'll see you at 10.
You gonna give me that envelope or do I blow it out of your pocket?
The same way you handled Louise Davis?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. You killed her and you killed her brother.
You got it all figured out, haven't you, Kelly?
The horn player's right, Dex. Don't turn around.
You got it wrong, Ludd.
I don't think so. I never should have let you kill Benny. That should have been the tip-off on that kid in the church and Benny's sister. You had to make the big try.
It was for me and you, Ludd.
It won't wash. You're gonna die, Dex. Pick a spot to lay down.
Not in the back, Ludd. You'd give me a better chance than that.
Would I?
Look out, Ludd!
Like I said, Dex, pick a spot. Well, that wraps it up, Kelly.
You better sit down, Ludd.
No, this'll do. It won't be a long wait. I don't mind standing.
Suit yourself. 6 o'clock, Ludd. Here's your envelope.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hello, Pete.
Hi, Father.
Just going to stop by. I heard the gunshots and knew you'd be around.
Well, let me tell you again, Father. I'm sorry about Jake. I don't know what else to say. I'm just sorry.
I believe you. We'll have the funeral for little Jake tomorrow. Maybe you want to stop by.
Yeah. Some things never figure. A 9-year-old kid shot down. No reason for it. None in the world. 9-year-old kid.
It's done, Pete. Don't waste your pity on little Jake. He's got a big lead on both of us.
I don't get you, Father.
You and I should die as good as a 9-year-old.
Pete Kelly's Blues, starring Jack Webb, with story by Jim Moser and music by Dick Cathcart, scoring by Matty Matlock.
The music of Pete Kelly's Big Seven consists of Dick Cathcart on cornet, Matty Matlock on clarinet, Nick Fatul on drums, Ray Sherman on piano, George Van Epps on guitar, Judd Donat on bass, Mo Schneider on trombone. The songs of Maggie Jackson were written by Arthur Hamilton.
And here's Heather with the weather.
Well, it's beautiful out there, sunny and 75, almost a little chilly in the shade. Now, let's get a read on the inside of your car. It is hot. You've only been parked a short time, and it's already 99 degrees in there. Let's not leave children in the back seat while running errands. It only takes a few minutes for their body temperatures to rise, and that could be fatal.
Cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. Never leave a child in a car. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, Heather, and the Ad Council, for that lovely PSA. What we heard was Jack Webb starring in Pete Kelly's Blues. That was titled, the story was titled Little Jake, with an original air date of the 25th of July, 1951. For the second half of the program, I'm going to go back to an old favorite, Jimmy Stewart and the Six Shooter. This one is titled The Battle at Tower Rock. It's had an original air date of the 21st of February, 1954. My name is Arthur, and you're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.
In the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter. A transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Grit Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still remembered legends.
Tower Rock sure was spruced up. Flags on almost every building, a big banner stretched all the way across Main Street, all the way from the roof of the hotel to the top of the Wickford Bank. Franklin County Fair, that's what it said. Prizes, rodeo, free barbecue, Saturday, August 20th, come one, come all. Well, tomorrow would be the 20th. I'd come to town day earlier and be sure of getting a room. Good thing I did, too. Only one left is on the second floor. The livery stable side of the hotel at that.
I put my clean shirt in the dresser drawer and headed downstairs. The clock in the lobby said 3:15. Well, that meant I had time to sort of give Tower Rock the once-over before supper. Thought maybe I'd wander over and see how Kermit and Rome were getting along. But just as I was crossing the street, I saw Rome come out of the front door. Rome! Hey! Hey, Rome!
Hmm? Oh, Britt! Well, well, well. Finally decided to put in an appearance, huh? How are you?
I'm fine, Rome. Fine. I was just on my way over to see you.
You're not running short of cash, are you, Britt?
No. No, this is going to be a social call. Not that I'm flush or anything like that.
Come into town for the fair, huh?
Yeah. I haven't been to one since I don't know when. I figured Dad Morgan's cattle would do without me for a few days, so... Well, how are things with you, Ron?
Oh, so.
Bessie, is she all right?
Oh, pretty well.
Kermit and Thelma, are they?
I guess they're all right.
You guess?
I ain't inquired lately. Well, I better get moving. I told Bessie I'd pick her up at the schoolhouse. She's on the decorating committee. I'll see you later, Brad.
Yeah, I'll see ya. I sure couldn't figure out what was the matter with Rome. Well, he froze up when I mentioned Kermit. Why, they'd always been more like kin than in-laws. Folks said it sure was lucky for the Wickford girls to marry two fellows who got along so well, especially after Jess Wickford died and left the bank to both his daughters 50-50. Like, Kermit and Rome had turned into first-class bankers, too. The Wickford Bank probably was worth about twice as much now than it was when Jess had run it.
Well, hello, Britt. Where'd you come from?
Hmm? Oh, Kermit. Oh, I was just thinking about you.
About me?
Yeah, well, I ran into Rome a minute ago.
I suppose he was shooting off his mouth again.
What? Well, no.
Well, just
no.
Don't believe everything you hear, Britt. There's two sides to every story. Remember that.
Sure, Kermit.
Well, I got to be running along. Thelma's at the schoolhouse waiting for me to fetch her home.
Well, you could have saved yourself a trip.
Huh?
Well, that's where Rome was heading to get Bessie. He could have picked her up Thelma at the same time.
Well, you don't think they'd ride in the same buggy, do you?
Huh?
Well, I'll probably see you at the fair tomorrow. So long.
Sure. So long. Well, there just wasn't any doubt about it. There's something that happened between the Binghams and the Madden, that's all. There must have been something pretty serious, too, the way Kermit and Rome had been acting. And knowing Thelma and Bessie like I did, I sure was glad I wasn't involved in that. But they were real firm women, Thelma and Bessie. Always had been, ever since they were girls. I couldn't help wondering just what had set them off. Not that it was any of my business, of course, but I... Well, Otis Spear didn't know. Yeah, being the justice of the peace and the local undertaker, he knew almost everything that went on in Foster County.
You ain't never seen nothing like it, Britt, the way they've been behaving. Why, they even spoke to each other for the past 2 months.
You don't say.
Take turns going to church. One Sunday the Binghams attend services, next Sunday the Maddens, just so Thelma and Bessie won't meet up.
Well, that's the darn... I can't believe
well,
it.
Well, that ain't the half, Britt, not the half. You remember the Social 16? You know them couples who always got together and played whist on Friday nights?
Yeah.
Well, it ain't the Social 16 no more. The Binghams pulled out, the McDaniels and Johnsons and the Potters, they left at the same time. We got two social eats now.
You mean this foolishness has gone beyond Thelma and Bessie? Other folks are taking sides, too?
Well, see, they are. The whole town split right down the middle.
Well, I never heard of such a thing. Well, how'd it start, anyway?
Well, last May, that was the beginning. Thelma's birthday is the first week in May. Her sister Bessie, just a year younger, almost to the day her birthday's the 10th or 11th, right in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Well, seems Kermit bought his wife a new Surrey for a birthday present. Had it shipped all the way out from Kansas City. Thelma sure was proud, too. Well, you can't blame her. It was just about the nicest carriage this town had ever seen. The nicest until it came time for Rome to give Bessie her present the following week.
You don't mean he bought Bessie a Surrey, too?
Yeah, that's what he did. Well, yeah. Even fancier than the one Kermit gave to Thelma. Yep, a whole lot fancier. Red leather seats with real springs in them, a white top and painted white wheels. Of course, Rome said it was just a coincidence that he'd ordered Bessie Surrey long before he found out that's what Kermit was giving to Thelma.
Well, and it sounds reasonable, too. He could have done
yeah,
that.
Yeah, some folks think so and some don't. Uh-huh. Kermit and Thelma claimed it was just plain spite work. The Rome and Bessie had always been jealous of them. Anyhow, that Surrey business just seemed to set everybody off, especially the women. Oh, being sisters, I guess they'd had their grievances before, but they'd always held them back. Now they just let fly in all directions. Why, Thelma's even going to...
Huh? What were you going to say, Otis?
Oh, nothing, Britt, nothing. you're going to stay for the fair, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, sure. That's why I'm here.
Uh-huh. Well, I was thinking, maybe you wouldn't mind helping me out.
Oh? What?
You see, I'm general chairman of the whole doings, and I got almost everything set except in some of the judging.
Oh, well, I'm not much of an authority, but I guess I can tell a cow from a horse.
Oh, no. We're all fixed up in that department, but the baked goods and preserves and pickles, well, I just haven't been able to find the right person to hand out the blue ribbons there.
Oh, well, I don't know anything about cooking, Otis.
Well, you know about tasting, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what you got to do, Britt. Sample whatever they put in front of you and say which one tastes the best.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
I'll tell you what. I'll just put you down for preserves. I'll get somebody else to take over the rest of the stuff.
No, but...
Well, I got a meeting of the barbecue committee over at the general store.
Yeah, but...
You'll be at the schoolhouse 9 o'clock in the morning. That's when the judge is supposed to start.
But where... Otis, what... Where's the idea of me giving out blue ribbons for preserves? I couldn't tell peach from grape if it wasn't for the color. Well, there wasn't any sense of me standing here in the funeral parlor worrying about it. So I went back to the hotel to fix up for supper. Yeah? Who is it?
Bessie Madden, Britt.
Just a second. Well, won't you come in, Bessie?
Well...
Hey. Well, you're looking well.
Oh, so are you, Britt. So are you. My goodness, I don't think I've ever seen you look better.
No, now, Bessie.
Well, now, what I come by for was to pick you up and take you over to our house for supper. You don't have no other plans, do you?
No. I was just going to eat here at the hotel.
Oh, you don't think we'd let you eat at the hotel, Britt? Why, you're one of our closest friends, always have been.
Well, I
don't know why Rome didn't invite you when you met up this afternoon. Guess he just took it for granted that you'd know I'd be expecting you. We're having fried chicken, hot biscuits, some of my strawberry preserves. You do like chicken, don't you, Britt?
Oh, sure.
Well, what are we waiting for? I've got my surrey outside, and I'd be glad...
Well, excuse me, Bessie.
Of course, Britt, of course.
Britt, well, I just heard that you were in Tower Rock, and I wanted to tell you Kermit and I are expecting you for supper. Now, I won't take no for an... Oh, I thought you were alone. Didn't mean to interrupt anything.
You're a little late, Thelma. Britt's having supper with Rome and me.
Might have expected you'd pull a stunt like this, Bessie Madden. Trying to bribe him, huh?
Bribe ladies.
And
ladies,
I suppose you didn't ask him to supper yourself. This is one time you can't lie out of it, Thelma. I heard you with my own voice.
There's no reason I shouldn't ask him. Britt's a friend of mine.
A friend of yours? You've never put yourself out for him before, not once in your whole life.
Bessie.
And since when were you so interested in his welfare?
Thelma.
The minute you found out he was going to be judging the preserves tomorrow, that's when.
Preserves?
As if I had any cause to try and influence him. My strawberry preserves have won first prize at every county fair for the last 10 years.
Yes, but I've never entered against you before. I let you win, but this time it's going to be different.
You're just making a fool of yourself, Thelma. You couldn't cook up a strawberry preserve if your life depended on it, huh?
I've got Mama's recipe, too, and don't you forget it.
Now, hold on here. Now, I want to get this straight. Now, both of you have entered your strawberry preserves in the fair tomorrow.
I've entered my preserves. Can't speak for her.
No, mine will be there, too. Don't you worry about that.
And I'm supposed to judge between them, is that it?
Otis Spears said you'd agreed to do it.
That's right.
Well, Britt?
Just wait till I get my hands on Otis Spears.
Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Well, I told Thelma and Bessie that I couldn't have supper with either one of them. As a matter of fact, I kind of plain lost my appetite, I guess. I did take me a while to get rid of them, though. Both of them kept lagging behind, wanting to get the last word in. But finally they went home. Well, Otis Spears wasn't at the funeral parlor, so I went over to Widow Berkeley's boarding house where he lived and waited for him. It was after 9 o'clock before he showed up. Miss Berkeley had already gone to bed, and I heard the front door open. I saw him head for the hall steps. Hold on, Otis.
Huh? Oh, Brad. Well, what are you doing here?
I just wanted you to know that I won't be judging any preserves tomorrow.
What?
You heard me, Otis.
But Brad, you promised you'd do it.
I didn't promise any such kind of a thing. And I don't appreciate your trying to get me in the middle of this feud between Thelma Bingham and Bessie Madden, either.
Oh, you found out, huh?
I sure did. Well, they were over to see me, both of them. Oh, I never heard such a hen squabble in my whole life.
Well, I told you this thing between them was serious.
Well, there were a few things you didn't tell me, like the fact that they're both entering strawberry preserves at the Doohan's tomorrow.
Well, no, Brick, you don't understand it.
I understand, all right. You didn't want to tackle the job of judging those preserves yourself, so you shifted on me. I understand, all right.
I couldn't judge them, Britt. Don't you see? Whichever way I was to choose, I'd make enemies of half the folks in town. My burying business would drop off 50%.
Now, Otis,
yeah, but you're an impartial judge, Britt. You ain't taking no sides in this fracas yet.
And what's more, I don't intend to, either.
Well, of course, that's the way you feel. If you want Thelma and Bessie to go on feuding, and you won't do nothing to stop it.
Well, I sure don't see how my judging their preserves would have anything to do with ending their fight.
It's this way, Brett. You're the six-shooter. Everybody in Tower Rock likes you and respects you, and they all know you ain't got no axe to grind in this affair, so whatever decision you handed down, they'd have to accept it. Both Thelma and Bessie.
Oh, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't.
Oh, they would, all right. Now, what I'm getting at is this, Brett. Folks have forgotten about the two surreys by now. The argument's going way past that. And these here preserves have just about become the crux of the matter. You see, Bessie's always been known for making the best strawberry preserve in the whole county. They're her chief claim to fame, you might say. Why, she's even took blue ribbons at the state fair.
Oh, that's so.
And nobody's even thought of entering against her nut for years and years.
Not until this year.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Now, if Thelma's preserve should be judged better than Bessie's, well, that'll mean Thelma's beat her on her own ground. Bessie wouldn't have a leg to stand on. She'd just have to admit that Thelma won out, and, well, that might settle the trouble between them.
Mm-hmm. You think that'd be best, Otis, for Thelma's preserves to win?
Well, not necessarily. You see, if Bessie should take the blue ribbon again, well, that'll sort of show everybody that she's still top dog, in the preserve line anyway. And folks who've been supporting Thelma might swing over to Bessie's side. And that might settle everything, too.
Mm-hmm. The way you've got to figure it out, it wouldn't matter who wins. Either way, the fight would be over, is that right?
That's right. That's it, exactly.
Well,
of course, it's possible that Thelma's taking first prize might just make Bessie madder than ever and sort of add fuel to the fire. And it's possible that if Bessie was to win again, vice versa.
Vice versa, yeah. I'd say it's more than possible. I'd say it's likely.
Oh, now, Britt, you mustn't look on the dark side. I'm absolutely certain that if you make the right decision tomorrow, you'll end this whole thing once and for all. Thelma and Bessie will go back to being fond of each other, and Tower Rock can have a little peace and quiet for change.
I see. And just what is the right decision, Otis?
Why, that's easy, Britt.
It is, huh?
Well, sure. All you have to do is give the blue ribbon to whichever one made the best taste in preserves. You don't think we're running a crooked county fair, do you?
Well, sir, I never saw a fellow like Otis Spears. He could talk circles around a Philadelphia lawyer. Well, finally, I saw that if I was going to get any sleep at all that night, I'd just have to give in. But I made up my mind to one thing. I wasn't going to have Thelma or Bessie turning on me, either one of them. I was going to say that their preserves tasted exactly the same and call it a tie. And that way there wouldn't be any harm done, and I'd be leaving things just the way I found them. Of course, I didn't tell Otis what I was planning to do or anything. I just promised that I'd meet him at the schoolhouse in the morning.
Good. I knew you'd come around, Britt. When you saw how much I needed you, I knew you couldn't let me down.
Well, Otis...
I'll walk you to the door.
Never mind. I'll find my way out. Night.
Night, Britt. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, say...
Uh-huh.
The There was one thing I forgot to tell you. It sort of slipped my mind.
Oh, what's that?
Well, in case you have any trouble deciding as to whose preserves are the best, well, there couldn't be a tie.
There could be. Why not?
Oh, you could call it a tie, but that would still mean that Thelma had won.
How's that?
Well, don't you see, Brett? If Thelma's strawberry preserves are just as good as Bessie's, well, folks would think that Thelma had been letting her sister win all these years by not contesting with her before. No, a tie would be the same as giving the prize to Thelma. You do see that, don't you?
Yes. Sure. Well, so long.
So long, Brett. And may the best woman win.
Brett. Oh, Brett.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hello, Kermit. You're up pretty late, aren't you?
Yeah, I've been looking for you.
For me? Oh.
Yeah, well, Brett, I think this quarrel between Thelma and Bessie and between Rome and me and all the rest of it, I think it's gone entirely too far.
You do? Well, I'm glad to hear you say so.
But if Bessie and Rome won't come to their senses, well, they've just got to be taught a lesson. And maybe Thelma's right. Maybe the fair tomorrow is the place to do it.
What?
Well, at least everybody will be there to see Bessie when she gets her comeuppance. That is, if Thelma's strawberry preserves... what I'm getting at is this. Now, Thelma's just got to win, Brett. If she don't, my life will just be miserable. And Thelma's got a real knack for making me miserable.
Hello, Rome.
Hope you don't mind my waiting here in your room, but I just had to see you. Bessie sent me.
Well, it was the same thing over again from Rome, except that he was a little more forceful than Kermit. Well, after he'd gone, I tried to get some sleep, but all night long, I just kept dreaming about strawberry preserves. Jars and jars of strawberry preserves. I finally woke up. It was after 7 o'clock, nearly 3 hours after my usual getting up time. Somehow, I didn't feel very rested either. I got dressed, and I stopped off at Gravy Gibson's Cafe for some breakfast. Not that I could eat very much. Then I started off in the direction of the schoolhouse, and the judging was already underway when I got there.
Second prize goes to Mrs. Hal Spidle for her devil's food cake. Honorable mention to Mrs. Johnny Seals for her chocolate lair. Honorable mention to Miss Addie Simpson for her sponge. Now, let's see, the next item is... Yes. Preserve. I don't see you. Oh, there he is. All right, right up here, Britt. Right up here. There he is.
Excuse me. Beg your pardon. Yeah.
Well, folks, I guess you all know Britt Fonsett. Well, Britt has been kind enough to volunteer his services in judging the preserve. Now, let's see. I believe there are, only two entries. Well, yeah, that's right, too. Both strawberry. Yeah, quite a coincidence. Yes. Well, the first entry is submitted by Mrs. Bessie Madden. Bessie Madden. And the second entry comes from Mrs. Thelma Bingham. Yes, yes, sir. Now, I'll just unscrew the caps on these jars. Hey, goodness gracious. Miss Madden doesn't know her own... There we are. You can just use a spoon there on the table, Brett. It's clean. All right, if you're ready, here's the first jar. This is Bessie Madden.
Thanks, Otis.
Hey, just... Brett, be careful!
Golly, I don't know how that happened, Otis. I thought I had a good, firm grip on it. Well, I sure am sorry.
I'll bet you were. Well, folks, I... Seems we had a little accident up here. Mrs. Madden's preserves are kind of divided between the floor and Britt's trousers. I just don't know what we can do under the circumstances. Looks like, we'll have to rule that there's only one entry available for tasting.
You just and, rule no such thing, Otis Spears. I've got another jar of my preserves right out in the hall.
Oh, another jar?
Bring them along, figuring there might be a slip-up somewhere. I'll be right back.
Well, that was sure far-sighted of Bessie, wasn't it, folks? Well, while we're waiting, Britt can go ahead and taste Mrs. Bingham's jar.
Here you are, Britt.
I'll hold it for you. Just spoon right in.
Well,
Here now. And I'd appreciate it if you'd see that nothing happens to this one, Otis.
Don't worry, Bessie. Don't you worry. That one come off a little easier. All right, Britt. These are Mrs. Madden's. Go right ahead. Well, you had enough?
Yeah, I've had enough.
All right, folks, all right. Quiet down. Britt Ponsett is ready to announce his decision.
Well, it's my opinion that I want to be sure of one thing first. Now, I understand that my job is to say whose preserves taste the best. Is that right? I'm supposed to pick the best-tasting strawberry preserves in the whole county. Is that right, Otis?
That's right, Britt. That's right.
Yeah. All right, then. Now, these preserves of Mrs. Madden's, they're very good. Now, you might say they're excellent. But I've had better. Now, there's no doubt about it. I've tasted better. And right here this morning, too. Right here in Tower Rock. Now, Mrs. Bingham's preserves here. Now, they're good. No, they're more than good. They're excellent, too. But they're not the best.
Now,
ladies and gentlemen, to me, the best-tasting strawberry preserves in Foster County are the ones I ate this morning at Gravy Gibson's lunchroom. No, I'm awarding the blue ribbon to Gravy Gibson. You see that he gets it, will you, Otis?
Wait, you can't do this, Britt. Gravy Gibson wasn't even entered.
Now, you told me you wanted me to pick the best-tasting preserves in the county, and that's what I've done.
Why, the very idea, comparing our preserves to the kind of thing Gravy Gibson serves up.
It's an outrage. I've never been so insulted in all my whole life.
Now, you see here, Britt,
if you think you can get away with this...
Why, for 10 years, Bessie's preserves have been winning blue ribbons.
And Thelma used the same recipe I did. Now, Mother's recipe, and nobody's ever had a finer recipe for strawberry preserves than Minnie Whitford.
That's right.
Now, just a minute.
Don't you just a minute on.
No, sir. Why, half the time you can't even eat Gravy Gibson's food.
Why, everybody knows that.
Of course. Well, this is the last county fair I'm ever going to enter, Otis Spears.
And that goes for me, too. Bessie, come on, let's get out of here.
The sooner, the better.
Well, don't just stand there, Kermit. Can't you see we're leaving?
Yes, dear, yes.
No? Come on.
Yes, Bessie.
Why'd you see that, Britt? They went off together. All four of them. Together.
Yeah. That's how it looked, all right.
Oh, if that don't beat the Dutch. You got them so mad at you, they all went off together. I might have known you was up to something.
Why, I don't know what you're talking about, Otis. I was just giving my considered opinion about strawberry preserves. Yeah, the funny thing about it was it's true what I said. The preserves I'd had and my breakfast toast over Gravy Gibson's did taste better than Thelma's or Bessie's. Of course, the fact of the matter was, I really couldn't taste their preserves at all. I just burned the daylights out of my tongue drinking Gravy's coffee. Couldn't taste a thing afterwards. Boy, that was miserable coffee if I ever... The gravy sure is a terrible cook.
Okay, we heard James Stewart as the Six Shooter. That was titled The Battle at Tower Rock. I've played that several times on here.